Please hang up and try again.
Welcome to the Digital Trekker. I'm Matt Brandon, and today I'm talking with Esther Havens in Haiti as we speak. Esther, obviously the earthquake brought you to Haiti, but is there someone who's sponsoring your trip down there?
Yeah, there's actually several organizations that I came here for. I actually had no plans of coming to Haiti when I saw the earthquake on TV. I'm not a photojournalist who usually jumps in the field right after a disaster. Mm-hmm. But I got a phone call from a guy that I had met in Nashville, and he has an organization called Safe Water Nexus. And he mainly works in Uganda, but he really felt like he should start focusing on Haiti with everything he was seeing on TV. So he set up a quick site and started raising funds. And before he knew it, all the dots were connecting for a trip in here with a private flight on day 6. And so he asked me to come, as well as a producer of the Dave Ramsey Show. And we had a pastor with us, and also an EMT and a police officer. So we came down with a really neat team, and we had supplies shipping in a few days after. When we showed up, we really didn't know what to expect, except that we just wanted to help people, and we started getting supplies out as fast as we could. We kept getting locations once we were here of people who wanted food, and we had access to the food. And so we would just go up to the airport, fill our truck with stuff, and get it out to people. Another thing that we were doing that first week was getting supplies we were going to the camps and asking anybody who was injured just to come out, and we wanted to treat them with our EMT. And the craziest thing, because they're like a boy with his hands completely gone, like all his fingers were gone, and he just had a little bandage on it. And actually, as they unwrapped the bandage, maggots were coming out because it hadn't been taken care of properly. And we had to take him straight to, we took him to the UN hospital, and he was put into surgery the next day. And I'm hoping that his hand survives, but we're still not sure. And there's another little girl that was there too, and her foot was like almost chopped off, was already turning black. And I mean, those are situations that if they don't have surgery right away, they're going to lose their arms and limbs,
or worse, they'll die.
So that's,
I mean, it's like gangrene setting in, right? I mean, septicemia or something.
Yeah. And so that's pretty much what got me here. I was really hesitant to go just because I know all the photojournalists were jumping on planes. Mm-hmm. And my heart is to help people. It's to help people first and then photograph. And so I went on that kind of that mission with them. It's just in a situation where people are crying out in pain just for anything. You know, everyone, when I was photographing that week, every single person kept asking me, please don't take my picture. Please just feed me. I just want food. They hadn't eaten in days. It's like, what do you say to that?
Yeah. So what did you say to that? I mean, how do you take pictures in a place like that?
Well, I had a translator, so I kind of just approached it differently. I put my camera behind me and said, what is your name? I got to know them, and I listened to their heart and their story and what happened to them during the earthquake, and just tried to get to know them and get into their heart and their lives. And I also tried to arrange for food drops to that community. If it was possible. And there's actually one, I went back to that tent city the next day, and there was a food drop, and it ended up in a riot because they didn't do it correctly. They were just, you know, handing out food without enough security. Mm-hmm. And it turned to chaos. They were holding back about 100 people, and I was really afraid at that point what was going to happen. And sure enough, it all broke loose, and people were crying, and so a little boy was about to drink bleach because he didn't know what it was. And they locked up the food in this van, and people were all trying to break into it. I just burst into tears at that point. I don't think you could do anything else. It's just like, if somebody's hungry, I would be doing the same thing if that was me.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, it's got to be almost complete chaos in some ways, but you sound like you've actually worked out some systems of distribution, and you can, you know, that there is places where you can go and funnel the supplies and the relief into. I mean, what's the work on the ground looking like right now?
Well, I would say it's still very disorganized. We're going into the fifth week now, and I'm still meeting people that aren't getting food. And they get so excited when they find something. I met a boy yesterday who came up with me with a bag full of rice, you know, probably two hands full in his bag, and he he said that he had to like go all over the city to find it, but it was enough to feed his family for the day, and he was so excited about it. But I also met a woman who hadn't eaten anything in 2 days. Because she's an older woman, she's not strong enough to get into those lines of people, and they're not delivering to every single camp. They're not able to.
Well, how long is your group going to be down there, and are we able to still give money and any other gifts in kind type thing?
Yeah, well, Safe Water Nexus is going to be working here down the line. They're actually working on opening an orphanage and building one in Cabaret. And so it's a city kind of west of Port-au-Prince. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be working on that, but there's so many organizations that are doing amazing things. Right now, I actually think the biggest need here is for tents. Every single person I've talked to is begging me for a tent, just because they know that the rainy season is coming. It rained last week in Passchendaele, and people were just running to the trees so that they wouldn't get wet, and they're talking about how they're just afraid to sleep at night because the rains are going to come, And so I think having waterproof tents for them, it's not going to solve the problem, but it's something that's going to, you know, last a little while and allow them to have at least sleep at night. Mm-hmm. Better than right now, there's just sticks and, you know, just bed sheets that are their homes.
Yeah, I think people don't understand that after an earthquake like this, I mean, obviously, all the buildings are gone. You know, I mean, a lot of them. I was in Kashmir during the earthquake there. And again, that was also one of our biggest deal. It wasn't as much food, although that always is an issue, but it was really, it was tentage and getting shelter for people. And, mm-hmm. You know, when the weather comes, there is nothing. There's nothing to sleep under. So is Freshwater Nexus buying tents or you got somebody else with that?
Safe Water Nexus is actually partnering with a guy named Sean King, and Sean King just had a vision to bring 200,000 tents to Haiti. And you can actually go to the website. It's called ahomeinhaiti.org. Okay. And he's raised, I think, almost 1,000 this last week, and they've already all been shipped here. So they're moving fast, very, very fast. I keep telling everyone I know, go buy a tent and send it here, and he'll get it there. And so they partnered with him. There's several other people I know that are partnering with him, and it's legitimate. I can tell you for sure that your tent will make it here. And also, I think it gives people in America something tangible to go buy and do.
So they don't care. They don't have they don't have a specific tent. They say, you go buy a tent, ship it to us, and we'll take it there? Or do you give money and then they have a certain tent that they have a deal with, like Eureka or somebody?
It's both. You can buy a tent on Amazon and send it to them. You can buy a tent at Walmart and ship it to them. If you have tents in your garage that you don't want, you can go and send it to them, and they will send it here. And I've actually heard, you know, the government's slowing down on that, and we're just kind of pushing against that because I think the government kind of their ideas on it, well, that's just going to keep the people here longer. Well, the people aren't going anywhere. They're building towns out of their little tent cities that they have. They're naming the streets on those. I just read a story about a guy who started a little bakery shop in his little tent thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to. They don't know how long they're going to be there. It might be a long time, and that's where they're at, you know. And so even my translator this last week, he's been sleeping just under, just a little sheet, and he begged me, I'm going to give him my tent later this week, and he was just saying, you know, they also get bit by the mosquitoes all night long, and there's women that are being raped in all of these tent cities, too. That's another big problem that's popping up in the last week. It's just not safe.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
It's extremely intense. So you're there with Safe Water Nexus and this, what is the tent organization? What's the URL again?
The tent organization is called ahomeinhaiti.org.
Okay. And then are you working with anybody else down there?
Yes. I'm going to be working with Charity Water for the next 2 weeks. They're going to come down and do some assessments for long-term projects. And we're going to be traveling actually to a city outside of Port-au-Prince. There's still a lot of people who are in Port-au-Prince have traveled to the outskirts. You know, I've heard people going all the way to DR as far as they can go. they have family anywhere, they're going to the families. And so there's tents set up in all different cities around. I'm going to be going to see some of those as well.
So give us a feel what it's like as far as just, visually, I can't imagine. I mean, it's a tropical area. You've got jungle when you don't have cities, I imagine. And you got dirt roads going from village to village. And most of these villages are flattened or semi-flattened. And people are got little tent cities next to these villages. Or what's the setup? I mean, how does it look?
Well, Port-au-Prince was a bustling city. I actually have never been here before. People are constantly telling me stories about it. So just like any African city that you would go to normally, people are roaming the streets. And so when the earthquake hit, it was around 5 o'clock. And the downtown was just, you know, people were everywhere. You had to push to squeeze by, like, excuse me, you know, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of why it was so, bad here, is because it happened at 5 o'clock when everybody was out in the streets. And what's happened is since the earthquake, people have come out of their homes with whatever they can. So they just set up, anywhere they could, and they kind of created these communities of tent cities. And they're pretty much on every corner. Like, I can drive down to the corner where we're at, and there's a tent city. They're everywhere. And some of them are, 1,000 people. Some of them are 100,000 people. And they're just all these little tents next to each other. Some people are sharing them. I know someone who had a waterproof tent, and they were fitting 6 people in a little 2-person tent, just to have shelter, you know? And so they're just squeezing all together. And there's lots of UN everywhere. It's definitely, I feel semi-safe driving around, just because there's a lot of Army and the UN that came that first week. And but I'm still hearing stories of dangerous things. I had a friend who was went to the hospital bay, and there was a protest, and the guy got shot. And that's another thing. When I'm sleeping at night, I was staying at a guest house, heard gunshots all night long. That stuff is happening, but you go into these tent villages, and these people are alive. They have so much hope. Every single person I talk with is just like, I want to see my country rebuilt. I want to see it beautiful, just like other countries in America. I was just talking with a guy today. He goes, if you have no hope, he goes, then there's no life. Mm. He's like, and we in our country, we have hope to see it rebuilt into something beautiful. We want a new Haiti. And it hit my heart so much, because they've lost everything. Everything is gone. You know, you leave your house with nothing, and most of your family's died, you know. That's what's breaking my heart, is like talking with these women. And I go into a hospital, I met this woman, Marie, and she lost 3 of her children. And my friend, Mel, she's doing rehabilitation. She's a physical therapist, and so she's working on people. And I got to really get to know this woman a bit, and she just started crying, you know, starting to talk about her kids. And she's been in this hospital the whole time. She has no idea what it looks like on the outside. She's just broken, you know. A lot of people are still kind of in shock, and they're afraid of another earthquake. And so that's part of the reason why, even if a person has a home, they're not in the home. Mm. Many people that I talk to, they're like, no, there might be another one. We don't want to go back. But I'll go look at their home, even if it's standing, and they don't want to be inside. And I understand. I went through the 6.3 aftershock here, and my heart, even being inside right now, I'm very jittery. I'm like, the moment I feel anything, I'm running for the door.
You still got a lot of aftershocks happening?
No, we haven't had one since last Tuesday. So I don't know what that means. I know that there's been a lot of talk about another one coming, that the possibility is there. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to walk with the people here and have hope with them. And I mean, it's easy to look, I think, at the situation and see how overwhelming it is, and just lose that hope. But I think that's what we have to hold on to, like everybody together with these people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Haiti is traditionally a very religious country. A lot of Catholicism, and then also a lot of sort of animistic sort of voodoo stuff going on. Has that played into any of this that you've seen?
Yeah, this last weekend, the president declared 3 days of fasting and prayer. And so I saw this country, praise God, like I've never seen before, like in any country. Mm-hmm. The churches were overflowing to the streets. Like, people couldn't even fit inside any of the churches. The churches in the fields were just people were everywhere praising. I was in one street, and all these people had all these twigs in their hands, praising God as they went down the street. And so, and most people that I talk to, I ask them about that hope. They're like, only God can save us. Only God can save us. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really seeing that turnaround as this country is just coming before God. And, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things that I keep looking at my life. I think I posted it on Twitter the other day. If my house crumbled, like, would I still be praising God? And I see these people, and they are, you know, they have nothing, and they're still going, God, we love you, we praise you. So
what's next for you? What's happening with you in Haiti? How long are you going to be there?
I'm here until February 28th. My brother is actually flying in tomorrow with Samaritan's Purse, and so I'm excited. He's never been here before, and I'm going to get to show him around a bit with them, and so that's kind of the plan for tomorrow. And then I leave Friday with Charity Water for the end, for the rest of the trip. So my plan is to come back in March. I don't know how I'm even going to leave to go back. I've got the conference, Southwestern Photojournalism Conference, I'm speaking at in a few weeks that I've got to go back to Texas for. Okay. But my plan is to come back and keep trying to rebuild with these people. And I tell you, they just want a voice. And that's what I encourage all photographers that I'm meeting to do, like, be the voice for these people and not just show what we want to show. I think as photographers, it's really easy to go in and want to try to get a Pulitzer Prize, you know, shot in this situation. And I feel like that's taken advantage of. I went to a lot of places where, like, a doctor would approach me and be like, please don't photograph. Like, these people need dignity. And they were telling me how many photographers came in and just started shooting without asking and just not respecting the people. Mm. I think that's key in situations like this. They need us, you know, to give them hope and to respect them. And there's so many ways that you can do that in photography. And by not thinking about ourselves and thinking about them and their story and how they would want to tell it, not how we want to tell it.
Yeah, it's a good point. So what have you been doing as far as photography? I mean, it sounds like you're getting some pushback as far as shooting images. And you said one way you handled it was just keeping the camera around your back until mm-hmm. you feel the liberty to shoot. Has that kind of been your MO, so to speak, the way you're working?
Well, I guess so. The first week I had a really hard time shooting. I wasn't sure what to shoot. I saw a lot of photographers out doing anything and everything for their shot, and I want so badly just to respect people, like I said. So, that first week I barely posted any photos. I'm actually tonight going to post my first blog post on Haiti that was photographs. I put twit pics up, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. And I've allowed the organization to use images for their use, but I just wanted to make sure that whatever I posted was for the people. And so it's taken a little while for me to really feel that and feel it out kind of and see what it is that I need to post. And for the last week, I've really gotten into people's lives and gotten to really know their need and what they want to be told. And so I'm going to try and post some imagery of their stories. Okay. And I hope that it speaks to a lot of people. And my hope out of it is just that people will go and donate. And you know, I know there's so many distractions in America, especially with CNN not focusing on things here, and I feel like we need to focus on it even more than we did a month ago. If we don't, like, the situation is better, but it's nothing's fixed. It's just like, it's you know, there's people out just sitting everywhere for us to do something, and I think this is such a place for all of us to act and to help them. And they know what we're doing. They so know. This girl came up to me yesterday, and she gave me her pin. She goes, I just want to thank you for coming to my country to help. She goes, and she gave me her only pin that she has. Mm. And I actually tried to give it back to her. I was like, no, I don't want to take it. I want to give it back to you. And she's like, no, you have to keep this. And so I gave her my bracelet back. But just to show you that these people are amazing. They just, they're so grateful for what they're being, anything that they're, you know, given. And another big problem that I'm seeing is just the jobs. And I know it was pretty bad here before with the jobs, but I've been approached probably by more than 50 guys in the last few days for a job. They all speak English, and they come up to me, hello, what is your name? And just asking me if they can work or translate or do anything, if I know anyone that could work. And they were looking for, you know, $5 to $10 a day. That's it. And for most of us, it's just a latte, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they just want work so they can buy food for their families, and there's just not enough work. And so I'm trying to push people to try to be creative with their organizations. We're bringing a lot of, you know, U.S. workers in. We're bringing a lot of missions teams in, but I think it's really important to hire nationals and everything that we're doing to give them work in that.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to be taking jobs that they could be doing.
You mentioned a lot of the work that's being done there, both from organizations and like church mission groups and things like that. Do you feel like most people are being respectful and actually are helping? Or it seems to me like this kind of stuff, oftentimes people can get in the way and almost take advantage of the situation, in that it becomes a platform for them rather than a help for the Haitians.
Right. I do think there are organizations that take advantage, and you have to watch out for that. And I talked with another guy today who told me, you know, that he's seen the small organizations who are doing the most aid, and he's lived here for the last, you know, 20 years. He's a Haitian American, and he's seen it himself here, that it's these small organizations that are coming in that are doing the most work. And I'm not one to bash people at all. It's just that I think when you have large aid organizations, it's a lot of paperwork and a lot of just things that have to go through in order to actually get things done. And what I've just seen with these organizations that are popping up and just coming and doing is that they're getting stuff out. They're not asking questions. They're just going out and they're delivering food, and they are helping people. They're getting doctors to where they need to go. And that's what, it's a day-to-day survival here for these people. Hmm. They wake up to find food, you know? They have to find food to survive for the day. They have to find water. That's all they're thinking about.
You know what? Anything else on your mind before we wrap this up? I know that you've probably got to start thinking about dinner or going to bed here pretty soon there and where you are. So.
Yeah, I just had some dinner. Luckily, the organization here I'm staying with right now, they're providing for me nicely. I guess my plea is just that everybody stays focused on Haiti, that we don't lose sight of these people, and that I think everybody can do something. Every single person in America and around the world can help here. And we all have our own giftings and our own things that we can do. And you know, I'm not anyone special at all. I'm a 26-year-old photographer with a camera, and I just love people, and I just came here to, you know, to do what I can. And it's like anybody who's coming here, they're helping. They really are helping, especially doctors and nurses, and there's still going to be a need for that, because these people who have been here working around the clock are going to be going home, these doctors and nurses and surgeons, and people are going to need to replace them. There's surgery still happening every day at the hospitals, every single day. I think another need is going to be for a physical therapist to come in and help these people, you know, learn how to walk, because they don't have any arms and limbs anymore. So that's what I would just encourage everybody to stay focused.
Well, we'll put the word out, and we'll be praying for you guys and all the best. And Esther, we will... we'll try to do this again when you're in the States, and maybe talk about some other work you're doing. I know you do a lot of work in Africa. I'd like to hear more about that.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Well, no, you. Thank you for the time. I know you're busy there, and you got a lot on your mind. I'm glad you're there, but I'm sorry you have to be there. You know, and but I'm glad someone like you and your caliber is there, and you're shooting. And shooting with dignity, and I really appreciate it.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have it any other way. These people are too amazing and too incredible. And it's just like, if I keep trying to imagine if this happened in our own city, what would we do? And I guess that's something that could stay with everyone. If this happened to you, what would you want everybody else to do? How would you want them to help you? And if we keep thinking of that, we can keep working harder every day.
Sort of the golden rule, in a sense, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Esther. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Please hang up and try again.
You've been listening to thedigitaltrekker.com. I'm Matt Brandon.